Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. This is Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Governor David Paterson will not be charged with anything criminal in connection with a domestic violence case involving a former top aide. Special prosecutor and retired Chief Judge Judith Kaye finally released her long-awaited report on the governor's actions, taking Paterson to task for what she called his errors of judgment. We'll unpack the report now, as well as check in on the rest of the goings-on in Albany and the New York political scene with Liz Benjamin, the host of the show Capital Tonight and a columnist for the Daily News. Liz, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So no legal consequences for a governor
That's talking right. Multiple
times to a woman who was accusing an aide and close friend of abuse.
Correct. Yep. Well, interestingly, though, you know, this is not the only probe that former Chief Judge Judith Kaye was charged with conducting by Andrew Cuomo, the attorney general, back in March. So there is another shoe yet to drop, and there are some who believe that that one actually could end up being more serious because the Public Integrity Commission actually accused the governor of lying in connection with his obtaining Yankees World Series tickets in 2009. So that one's still out there. This one, right, if you read the report, it's pretty damning, and yet there are no charges.
Is she also, refresh my memory, is she also looking into the goings-on with the Aqueduct video slot machines?
No, but there is a probe on that. That's the U.S. Attorney's Office, right? There are multiple. It's hard to keep it all straight, all the investigations going on in Albany. It's true. But, yes, that there is that one, too, and it is also out there. So I think there are a lot of the governor this morning, he was on the radio expressing relief, and he feels like he's been exonerated, according to his attorney, and he feels like he could have been a contender had he run in this fall against Andrew Cuomo. I mean, I don't know. He might be a little premature in his celebration. And of course, in this particular instance, he will not be charged. David Johnson, on the other hand, the aide against whom this domestic violence accusation has been made, will probably not be so lucky. The Bronx DA is looking into charges against him.
After reading the entire report, what were Kaye's reasons for not seeing any criminality in Paterson's actions?
She was, you know, she was very damning in her language in her saying that he had exercised poor judgment, which of course doesn't speak well to his ability to lead. I mean, that is a problem in terms of judgment is one of the things that one grades a leader on, generally speaking, right? If he's involving himself in very deeply, and also there's this voicemail that's pretty amazing that he leaves on the answering machine of this woman who has said that his top aide, with whom he was very, very close, David Johnson, had really been quite violent against her on Halloween 2009. He leaves this message that's like, you know, the Times story is out, and I don't know if you've seen it, but I really need your help. I mean, it's really quite surprising that the governor of New York would do such a thing. And nevertheless, in terms of witness tampering or, you know, anything legal, the law is quite prescribed about that. And of course, I'm not an attorney, but she failed to see any case in which he broke the law actually as the law is written.
I'm wondering if, and again, I'm not an attorney either. I'm wondering if it comes down to criminal intent. She didn't see any intent there.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is there was a lot of focus in the news reports about whether or not he had involved himself and asked her not to show up in court to press this charge against David Johnson. And both the woman, Sharuna Booker is her name, and the governor testified to the Office of Attorney General investigators who did this probe under Kaye's authorization, not because Attorney General Andrew Cuomo had recused himself from the situation for political reasons. They basically said that the governor and Ms. Booker had said neither of them had discussed the day before her appearance in court that she was supposed to be in court the next day, and she seemed to have almost not remembered that she was supposed to be there. And it speaks to how difficult it is for women when they're pursuing domestic violence charges against someone and getting an order of protection, and it has to be served, and it's very complicated.
Do you think Attorney General and the Democratic candidate for governor to take over Governor Paterson's job, do you think this was the report he wanted?
You know, people close to him insist that they had nothing to do with it, and they were very, very hands-off. And I think there's a very smart analysis today in the Times by David Halfinger that says that the report, politically speaking, is good for both David Patterson because it removes this tainted cloud, if you will, and enables him to go forward and seek a private sector job after his tenure is over. Now, also, again, getting back to the AEG probe and the Yankees tickets probe, we just don't know what else is out there and what might besmirch his good name, you know. But in this particular case, you know, domestic violence charges and involving yourself in them is quite a negative thing to have on your record going forward. In terms of Cuomo, this, you know, he does not get accused of abusing his office by bringing legal charges against a guy who might have been his primary opponent. Mm-hmm. So, and also, there's a whole issue of race here that people don't love to talk about. But of course, the governor's black, the first black governor of New York, and Andrew Cuomo ran against Carl McCall in 2002 in a failed primary bid. And so, you know, there's a lot of ill feelings about race here, and David Johnson is black, and it's just kind of yucky and messy that people don't want to talk about. That enables Andrew Cuomo, this report enables him to get out from under some of that.
I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with Daily News reporter Liz Benjamin about the report by former New York Chief Judge Judith Kaye on Governor Patterson and his involvement in a domestic violence case involving a top aide. She did not find any criminality, and there will be no criminal charges pursued against him, but she did castigate him for poor judgment. You said Governor Patterson spoke on the radio this morning and expressed regret for dropping out of the race.
A little bit. You know, this isn't the first time that he said that kind of thing. I think that anyone would feel similarly. I mean, he is a governor, and it is, no matter how difficult time he has had, it is a great job.
Yeah.
And I think that he enjoys being governor. I'm sure he enjoys the trappings of it, certainly. But in terms of how difficult it is and trying to get the legislature to cooperate, he's having a devil of a time of it. And I don't know necessarily that anyone else would have an easier time given the circumstances that he has right now. So it's not the first time we've heard him say that. And you know, but the reality was, look, he was very low in the polls even before all these scandals started to be a problem for him. He took over from Eliot Spitzer and then almost immediately had his own problems regarding extramarital affair stories that broke, and then he lost his top aide to a tax scandal, and then it just became like one thing after another, and he would have had a very difficult time of it. Plus, his fundraising was just not great in comparison to Andrew Cuomo's fundraising.
Well, and it's interesting to remember when this story was breaking, right? And the steady drumbeat of questions that the press kept asking the governor at every appearance. Are you going to step aside?
Right.
And the whole lead
right.
up to this was rumor and speculation in Albany that the New York Times was working on a huge report that was going to force the governor to resign. Then the Times finally did a series of reports leading to this investigation by the Attorney General's office, and now it turns out there was no criminal charges. Does the New York Times, does the media owe David Patterson an apology?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, and there's been a lot of navel-gazing about that particular topic. I mean, part of the problem was, you know, when all the speculation was really going on, it's a very small pool here in New York politics. Mm. We all talk to the same people, so we all knew that something was going on. You know, reporters knew that sources were being talked to, that the Times was working on something. We didn't know what it was, and the rumor mill just started going, and, of course, people with interests in that fanned the flames. And because of his prior admissions in terms of youthful drug use and extramarital affairs, I think that opened the door to more speculation about what else might be in the closet for David Patterson. So that was a problem, of course. And he then, you know, probably did himself no favors by going very, very aggressively against the media. But I'm sure that there will be countless sort of reviews of this whole situation going forward, and the media examining itself in this 24-hour cycle where, you know, news is given to you in 140-character bites through tweets is, you know, is going to be ongoing, not just with this scandal, but certainly with others in other states and nationally, too.
Before I wrap up and go on to asking you about what's going on or not going on, as the case may be, in Albany, just wanted to circle back. The Judith Case report also looked at the actions of a senior aide to Governor Patterson, Clemmy Harris, and to Charles Day, the former commanding officer of the Executive Protection Detail, both of whom also contacted Sharuna Booker. I'm sort of surprised that somebody in that direct position of police authority, right? A connection with the state police, Charles Day, part of the governor's protection detail, their contacts with Sharuna Booker also not rising to the level of criminality. What do you read in there?
Yeah, the state police has, Internal Affairs Office has launched its own investigation in the wake of the Kay report. So certainly we haven't seen the end of that on that end. And as you recall, the former state police superintendent, Harry Corbett, resigned in the wake of this. And there were a number of resignations.
Yes.
There was Denise O'Donnell, who was the public safety czar, resigned. You had Peter Kaufman, the former communications director, who is named in this report and talks about how he was really felt that the governor had lied to him and misled him about what he knew and when he knew it regarding an order of protection that Sharuna Booker had sought against David Johnson. There's a lot there, I agree with you, and I don't think we've seen the end of it.
There was a spectacularly unsuccessful special session of the state Senate yesterday where some lawmakers failed to attend. No progress was made toward closing the book on the state budget, which was due April 1st. What's going on? Did anything happen at all in that half-hour meeting?
Well, sure, they gaveled in and gaveled out. I mean, they were they fought about whether or not the governor had, in fact, delivered bills, which it turns out that he had. He had delivered the Senate had accepted, actually, 9 of the 10 bills that the governor had put on his special session agenda. You know, we should really sort of remind people that the governor can lead the horse to water but can't make it drink in this particular instance. But legally speaking, the governor has the right to call these lawmakers back to Albany and even compel them to do so, which he said this morning that he would seek a court order if they continued to flout his efforts to bring them back, because there were a number of lawmakers who didn't show up. They're on vacation or they just didn't feel like it. And he said he would go to court. He's done that before. He did it during the Senate coup of last summer, which seems like an age ago, but actually was not so long. But he can't force them to take up anything. They can gavel in and gavel out and not do a thing, and then gavel into their own regular session and pick up whatever they'd like. So, you know, that last night what happened was they railed against him for bringing them back when he knew, they say he knew, that there would not be enough people to pass legislation because the Democrats were short members. He insists he had no idea who was scheduled to go on vacation and who was not, and he had no way of knowing. And also, they say, look, you knew there were no deals, and yet you drag us back here. It's $100,000 and change just to do that in per diems and staffing, et cetera. Total waste of time and money.
And they're not getting paid.
They have a point, actually. They are not getting paid. That's correct. They have not been getting paid since April 1st. But that is, you know, that is something that George Pataki actually negotiated with the legislature in exchange, I think, for pay raises in charter schools back in 1998, I think it was. So that was supposed to be, you know, a stick with which lawmakers would get beaten if they couldn't bring an on-time budget to the people of New York, and it doesn't work so well, as it turns out. You just take out a loan, you know, or whatever it is that you might do.
Have we settled into a perpetual pause mode here? Governor Patterson is now saying the state's going to run out of money in September. Is that the case? He often says this, and then at the last minute, something seems to pull through. Another negotiating tactic to get lawmakers come in and finish this deal.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Last night, Senator Liz Krueger, actually, who's the vice chair of the Senate Finance Committee, raised the possibility that there would be no budget until the next governor takes over. I mean, let's also remember that the budget is 99% complete. What's missing is a revenue bill. And the revenue bill
But that's a big piece, right?
Yeah, it is and it's not. I mean, there are pieces of revenue that have already been passed because the governor put them in the budget extender bills. Plus there were cuts that have already been put in the budget extender bill, or rather, sorry, because he vetoed additional aid, for example, for education, that the legislature tried to add back. Those cuts are going forward, and there's really nothing that the legislature can do about it unless they could come up with a two-thirds vote to override, which just the Senate, you know, could not do in, you know, in a million years at this point.
But doesn't the governor need the what's he got on the table? The sugar tax on sodas? Is that still alive? Does he need this money, this revenue bill? Or are we going to find ourselves in another hole in a couple of months without this piece?
Well, the sugar tax isn't in the revenue bill, actually. So, I mean, you know, the governor would like, very much like to see things like wine in grocery stores the sugar tax and the property tax cap and, you know, a host of other things. But none of that is actually in the revenue bill. I mean, the legislature, you know, increased taxes on cigarettes, for example, and that's already been done. So the revenue for that sort of thing is already coming in. It's just this particular piece of it is not coming in. Now, the damage, certainly the state needs the money. Yes, I agree. But also, you know, there's always this sort of creative budgeting that happens. They've already revised the expected revenue picture up from tax collections. That happens, too.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with the Daily News' Liz Benjamin about all things politics in New York. Let's switch to Congressman Charles Rangel. There's a 1 p.m. Ethics Committee hearing looming in a few hours where that committee is expected to make public its allegations against him for ethics violations on such things as having four rent-controlled apartments in Harlem, not declaring rental income on a house he owns in the Dominican Republic. If you had to guess, do you think this thing gets solved in the next 3 hours before the committee publicly airs these allegations? I know Rangel's been working behind the scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of mixed messages coming out of Washington. Of course, I'm not there, so I can't say for certain. But, you know, you're seeing statements from Rangel where he's sort of both saying that, you know, he wouldn't mind seeing this go away, and yet he's defiant and wants to fight. And I think that it's mixed for him. It's now about legacy and that it's all going to be his many years of public service, 40 years tainted by this major blot on his record, and what a settlement would look like, I'm not sure. I don't know what he's willing to agree to and what he's not. A resignation, I mean, that's significant.
What's at stake for the National Democratic Party if Rangel refuses to take a plea and this thing goes to a very public process before the primary, before the national election in the fall?
Well, a lot. I mean, the Democrats, of course, the Republicans, regardless of whether Rangel stays or goes, the Republicans are going to use him as, you know, exhibit A of why the Democrats have a corruption problem and should be ousted in the midterm elections. They've already started to tie a bunch of folks to Rangel. He was a prodigious fundraiser and a prodigious giver out of campaign contributions, particularly when he was trying to flip the House into Democratic hands so he could become Ways and Means Chairman, which was a long-held dream of his, and he didn't get to hold that position for very long because of his own shortcomings. But, you know, he gave money to many, many people, and a number of those people are giving it back because they are trying to get out from under the taint of receiving it from him, and that's problematic. Plus, you're seeing some folks now back away from this big birthday party fundraiser that he's supposed to be having on August 11th in the city that was to be headlined by Governor Patterson and Mayor Bloomberg was to come and Senator Chuck Schumer and basically the cream of New York's Democratic crop. They were all there last year. Bill Clinton sent a video and said how great Charlie Rangel was. So, you know, it's going to be very difficult for the Democrats, regardless of what happens. Even if there's an 11th-hour deal and Charlie Rangel resigns and goes away or whatever might come of this whole thing, I think that they won't be able to escape this no matter how hard they try.
Do you think it would really be resignation? I just think accepting a censure or an apology.
I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, you know, even if he resigned, they can't prevent him from running. In fact, his name is already on the ballot, and the only way to get off the ballot at this point is to pass away, move out of state, or run for a judgeship, none of which I can see Charlie Rangel doing.
All right, enough about current political turmoil. Let's look to the future of New York's political turmoil. Does Carl Paladino's campaign to the right of Republican Democratic candidate Rick Lazio have a real chance to make a mark? You've been reporting on New York Republicans courting Paladino. He's been gaining in the polls. Yesterday, Rick Lazio announced he was changing campaign managers. So is Paladino really making a mark?
He seems to be. I mean, if you look at the Quinnipiac poll, he has gained on Lazio, although Lazio is still ahead of him. The momentum is in Paladino's camp. He said on New York One yesterday that he would not be a spoiler and would not remain on his independent taxpayers line in the general election if he fails to win the GOP primary. I think Republicans are getting very nervous. You have Lazio with less than $700,000. Just today, we're seeing a shakeup in the Lazio campaign. He's replacing his campaign manager, Kevin Fullington, with a guy named Matt Walter, who comes out of Joe Bruno's press shop a while ago. He's right now at the state GOP. So it's a very interesting thing, and I think Republicans are nervous. But what's really amazing is that they just can't capitalize on what was supposed to be this fantastic GOP year. And all across the country, you're seeing Republicans do quite well, and yet in New York, they just can't get out of their own way.
So do you think that means Carl Paladino does not have much of a chance to make waves versus Andrew Cuomo?
Versus Andrew Cuomo?
Yeah.
You know, that's difficult to say. I mean, Andrew Cuomo is pretty much the behemoth in this race. He's got a 30-point lead on either Lazio or Paladino. I think Paladino could make more trouble, potentially, for Andrew Cuomo, being more of an annoyance to him because, A, you just have no idea what the man's going to say in any given moment, and, B, he has $10 million he says he's willing to spend, and that's far sight more than Rick Lazio's been able to raise.
Liz Benjamin, the host of the show Capital Tonight and a columnist for the Daily News, thank you for your update.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, a surge in attacks on Hispanics on Staten Island, and we'll take a look at the judge's ruling on Arizona's immigration law. Are there connections between these two stories? We'll take a look. Stay tuned.